Welcome to the program, David Coleman.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you
today?
I'm great. Yeah. All the better for our pre coming on air chat.
If only they knew the true horror that lies not too far beneath the veil.
That's it.
And I'm just talking about you.
But you know, that's it. It's between like one little slide up of a microphone and one little slide down of a microphone.
That's the difference between more liable. Yay! Let's pay everyone off. David Coleman, of course. You had a good weekend, I trust.
I did a very good weekend. Yeah, played bridge all day Saturday. Fantastic.
Oh God! So you had a good weekend.
A great weekend.
And you enjoyed that, did you?
Yeah, no, it was really good.
Was it raining in Killaloe?
Lashing. Horrible weekend.
Perfect for bridge.
Weekend.
Even yesterday.
No, yesterday was okay. There was very little rain yesterday, but Saturday was absolutely a washout. Perfect day to be indoors playing bridge.
Did you watch the rugby?
Absolutely. No, enjoyed the rugby.
That was fun, wasn't it?
It was nice just to see them winning and knowing that they weren't about to kind of collapse or whatever. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
They played well, you know. Bit of hope.
I was watching the French game against England on Saturday, and they England were looking pretty good towards the end, and then the French just made them suffer with a try towards the end again. And so France, that's England out of the... Yeah, well, the Grand Slam for start, but it's great. I think it's
like
great
with New Zealand, you know, just a final kick in the teeth in the dying minutes. It's tough, but that's sport.
Apparently so. We're here to talk about families and a lot of talk about the neck noms. We don't have anything in on it for you, obviously, because it's so fresh in the news from last night and today, and sadly over the weekend. But you know, people saying, "Well, it's nothing to do with the social network," and I don't agree with that at all. Social medium, I think it's everything to do with it.
Absolutely, and
it's a hashtag.
Yeah, and it's that sense of the immediacy, the speed with which it's happening as well. Like, was it earlier on you were playing about the guy who was saying that, you know, 5 days ago, you know, I knew nothing about it. 4 days ago, you know, I first heard about it. 3 days ago, I was nominated. 2 days ago, I was a hero, you know, and today I'm just feeling really guilty.
Kevin Doyle was saying that. Yeah.
You know, and that, I suppose, is all to do with the social networks. That's all to do with it being on the internet. And it is that just that constant pressure that young people feel. And I mean, you know, I suppose mostly now the neck nomination thing, it seems to be all kind of early 20s.
Yeah.
You know, late teens, early 20s. But generally speaking, in terms of teenagers as well, the same pressures that are there and the same speed, that kind of viral nature of stuff just spreads like wildfire.
Yeah. And it just encourages them, as I say, as well with the bigger audience. Yeah. Let's get down to business to what people have to say. Ryan and David, I got a call from my 17-year-old daughter's yearhead last week to say that she had become aware through a third party that my daughter is self-harming by cutting herself. I didn't know she was self-harming, but I had noticed that she was spending a lot more time in her room. But from talking to others, that didn't seem to be too unusual. So I got the call on Monday, but didn't do anything until Wednesday as I was trying to figure out how to handle the situation. I then got a call from the principal saying she'd been shown something by my daughter had written and advised that I get her to the doctor as soon as possible. And when my daughter came home, I approached her and said I had received a call from the principal who said she was very concerned about her as she had become aware that she was self-harming. My daughter went into a rage and has totally withdrawn into her room. I am distraught and don't know what to do to help my daughter. And that's from a very worried mum, as you can imagine.
Yeah, understandably worried. And in fairness to the mum, though, she's done exactly the right thing, which was to kind of put on the table all the information that she has. I always think with situations like that, the last thing you want to do is to just kind of start inquiring generally and trying to see, will your daughter tell you about self-harming? Because chances are, if she's been self-harming in her bedroom, you know, she's doing it on purpose to keep it hidden within the family. So great that the mum just named exactly what her worry is. And I suppose the thing now really is for the mum to go back up, because she absolutely has to open some kind of dialogue now with her daughter about the issue and about not necessarily that her daughter will tell her the reasons why she's self-harming. She may not necessarily feel comfortable to tell her mum that, because again, whatever struggles she's facing, she probably has felt up to now that she has to deal with them on her own, which is one of the reasons perhaps that she's ended up self-harming, because the cutting for her may have been just that relief from the pressure of all these worries or troubles that she feels she has. So definitely from the mum's perspective, go up, you know, don't just, even if you end up talk through the door. Your main aim as a parent is just to express your concern, your love and your care for your daughter. It's not about, you know, kind of what she's done as something that needs to be punished or that, you know, even necessarily that you need to worry about her trying to change in the short term. The first thing is that she feels that she's understood, that you're willing to just listen and to try to understand, but absolutely go up husband talk, and do make an appointment with your GP, probably in the first instance, or if you can get recommendations in terms of either a child and adolescent psychiatrist or, you know, a good child psychologist who you feel confident has dealt with the issues of self-harm amongst teenagers, because you may find that it's just a little bit more than you as a parent can deal with on your own. And most parents, to be honest, you know, just don't feel at all equipped to deal with something as serious as self-harm. So absolutely go make an arrangement to meet with a GP to get a referral, or make a direct referral to somebody. But really it's just about talking to the daughter now and keeping this on the agenda, and let her know that you can understand that she might have felt so bad. You know, you're not in the mode of giving out. It's not about trying to make her feel bad now for self-harming, but it is just very much about you trying to understand what might be going on and trying to let her know that you're supportive and want to help.
All right, longer one says, my query relates to the relationship between my husband and son, and what do I do when things are rapidly going wrong? Two great people, but the problem is that my son is a bit of a messer and my husband lacks tolerance or patience, so there's not a great mix. He gets very cross, annoyed, angry very quickly. Sometimes the behaviour is unacceptable and needs to be corrected or discussed or dealt with. The problem is how it is dealt with. For example, son comes in, does a loud burp at the dinner table. Dad gets very annoyed. Son number two mimics the behaviour, and this annoys dad, and he ends up calling them both pigs, ignorant and rude. Son number one retaliates and says what he feels, spot on too, that he can never do anything right. Dad demands respect, and son says, you don't respect me, why should I respect you? And so on. Son ends up going to his room crying and really upset. If I intervene when I know my husband is so wrong, I'm undermining him in front of the children. What should I do in these situations? I talked to both of them separately later on when all was calm. Son has apologised to dad for burping, but dad had not apologised for the awful things he called the boys, which is remiss of the father, I would have thought, if we're all having a love-in of apologia. It's constantly negative between dad and the older son, because he's so like his own dad, and it's heartbreaking. Gah! That's a maelstrom, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a maelstrom, but it's easily resolved, really, because it's the dad that has to change in the first instance. And, you know, good that the mum is not trying to tackle the dad in front of the kids, because she's absolutely right. It would undermine him and his position and would just lead to further rows between them. But actually, you know, the dad, she doesn't say what age her son is, but if it's got to the point where he's going off crying, you know, he's probably no more than about 12, I would say, by the sounds of it, and 12, 13, maybe 14. But definitely the dad is in a much stronger position to make the changes initially. He's the one who needs to become a little bit more positive in his outlook, and he needs to look at his own anger stuff, whatever it is that, you know, winds him up so quickly, because typically, you know, with children, often what winds us up the most is when they most reflect us, when they do the stuff that we don't really like about ourselves. So you know, for example, we might consider them you know, oh, he's an awful lazy, you know, git, like he just sits in there on the sofa. And, you know, actually there's a part of us that would love to be just sitting in there on the sofa instead of having to be out washing up the dishes after the dinner. And so, you know, I mean, kids are just kids. They just do what kind of comes naturally. And absolutely, as parents, we have to guide and direct and encourage them to get involved in chores, all that kind of stuff. But the jumping down their throat at the smallest little, what's the word I'm looking for, step out of line that they might take, it's just, it's not necessary. I mean, you can still say, ah, lads, let's have no burping at the table. But there's a high likelihood that that in fact it's the, you know, the son sometimes is just doing it for attention. Sometimes he does it because it's just what's expected of him. Mm. He knows he's going to get, you know, disrespected by his dad. He knows his dad is going to be critical of him. So why, you know, his expectations probably aren't much higher. And so the dad needs to become, you know, he needs to see what's good in his son and avoid the criticism. It's the criticism that's ultimately going to destroy the relationship.
Is it a universal thing, the dad's relationship with their sons? I mean, our generation certainly would have had one type of relationship with our father. Our father's generation would have had, well, you're into Edwardian, Victorian almost, you know, just completely a different story. And then our relationship with our, I don't have a son, but, you know, daughters, whatever, would be very keen to be very present and I would hope loving. you know, but Irish fathers and sons seems to be a different phenomenon altogether.
I mean, I certainly can't speak without pointing a finger of, you know, blame at my own direction. Like, I think I'm quite a critical person, and I know I'm quite a bit like that woman, maybe not to the same extent, but, you know, I can be critical of my own eldest son particularly. Something I'm not particularly proud of. I do try and keep an eye on it. I do try and manage it. But sometimes, you know, it's there, and we say it before we think about it. And it's becoming, as you say, just gaining that awareness, because the more aware we are of it, then the greater chance we can change.
What does he do that gets in your nerves?
It's a bit like that kind of stuff, you know, like I was saying, you know, I mean, I would absolutely love to be able to just sit on the sofa and play on my phone for 4 hours at a time, you know, but I have other responsibilities, which unfortunately at this stage I realise I have to live up to, you know, and I'm sure he has other responsibilities too. He's got a junior show this year, so, you know, no harm for him to be up and maybe doing a bit of study.
Is he working all the time? Is he studying away?
In fairness to him, he is, you know, for all of the, as I say, these minor little niggles that I seem to manage to find about him, he's a great,
but great, you know what? I find myself this time, I feel like I'm a junior cert widower. I honestly, she's constantly in the room. And I know she's working away, but because I was always, before it was the couch and hanging out all the time. And now it's, no, I've got to go up, I've got geography. You know, I miss her. You know, it's not a strange thing to say. No, but I really do. I just think she's working so hard and it's, you know, because she has to. She's not one of, you know, I think that sometimes people have to work. Some people are a bit jammier. They can cram and all that sort of thing. But I think that, I don't know if anyone else feels like a leaving cert widow or a junior cert. You know, they have golfing widows and so on. Because they're just constantly working hard.
Yeah.
Head down.
Well, for those who are, you know, working hard, and it's because they do have a sense of responsibility, which is a great thing.
Yeah, so, I suppose that's what it is.
You know, because there's equally probably numbers of young people who are not, you know, spending hours and hours and hours locked away in their room studying, and they're
But you have to haul them out, by the way, for a walk or a...
Oh, definitely.
Get that air.
You know, it's all about balance, and let nobody tell you different. Absolutely. I mean, it's great that young people will want to study. Great that that they want to get their head into the books. But they need to keep eating. You know, they need to keep exercising, and they need to keep socializing. They need to stay present in the world. They need to remember that there is a world outside of their study. Absolutely. And it is all about that balance when it comes to the exams.
That is for sure. Now, how old is your son?
15,
yeah, because mine hit 15 on Friday, and I just like, God. Yeah, I know, but I'm just thinking.
And you went to work on her birthday.
Yeah, I know. I made up for it the next year. But 3 years later, she'll be 18, and then.
Yeah.
Then, you know, crikey.
Yeah. No, my son was just giving us the list of all the things he wants to do. And
After
the junior cert.
Really?
It's all, oh my God, he's great plans for his summer, and all independent of us. And it's like, oh, right. Oh, okay.
Then you'll be glad to see him, you see.
And then we're there thinking, well, wouldn't it be great if we could try and get a holiday in, you know, and...
you? No.
I think he'd be delighted to come, but it's like, when can we get away with that? But he's not doing something.
The diaries aren't working out. Yeah, I've got a bit of that going on too.
Because he's very involved in the, you know, the Venture Scouts, Scouting Ireland.
Yeah, super organisation.
Great organisation. So he's going away on a big summer trip with them. But actually in the interim, a little note for him now, he's completed his Chief Scout Award, which is the equivalent of the Brands Gashka. So actually it's going to be a ceremony now in the next week or two, I think. We'll all be up in Dublin for that.
And you're giving out about your Venture Scout superstar son.
This is what I say. I know.
Difficult dad you are. You need to see a child psychologist. That's your problem.
I would say if my children write the book, it will just shame me to
Mommy
death.
Dearest. Daddy dearest. You're like Joan Crawford's dad. Oh, that's brilliant. 51552. Please ask David about my daughter. Huge fear of dogs. She's 11. Any advice? I don't know if you cover canine as well as everything else, but it's getting worse and affecting her life and ours. We can't go to parks or open spaces, says Nula.
At age 11, I would be definitely considering bring her to see a psychologist, because it sounds like she's got a proper phobia of dogs. And phobias are straightforward enough in terms of dealing with them typically, but it involves a kind of a process of what they call graded exposure. So you learn how to relax yourself and manage the anxiety. Then you slowly, gently approach the feared object, whether it be through pictures initially or seeing a dog in a distance, or then, you know, slowly and gently coming closer and closer to the dog, but best guided by a psychologist. So absolutely make an appointment to go see somebody about that.
My child's 9, has an anxiety disorder. His teacher wants to push him more in the class, but as he's not reaching his full potential, I know when he's at breaking point, but will his teacher?
Well, the teacher might, as long as you go in and tell them, because obviously you've got much greater insight into your son, having lived with him for the whole 9 years, and the teacher's maybe had him for, what, 3 months at this stage, 4 months, yeah. 5 months. So do go in, absolutely make an appointment to talk to the teacher and explain what you know about your son. The other thing, though, you know, sometimes as a parent, we are a little bit blinded by our closeness to our children, and it may be the case that actually you underestimate what your son is able for, and perhaps his teacher sees another side and sees the potential for him to be challenged just that little bit more, and perhaps the challenge in itself, if it's successful,
yeah.
and if he can successfully achieve it, you know, he could end up feeling an awful lot better about himself and a lot less anxious. So do go in and talk about it, negotiate it a bit with the teacher, because actually the teacher might be just giving you the nudge to say, listen, you don't have to wrap him up so much in terms of perhaps you know, kind of cotton wooling him, and maybe it's okay for him to be challenged in these ways, and so maybe there's a nice balance somewhere in the middle, somewhere between what you fear, which is that it's going to get pushed too hard, and something which actually might be just a good challenge for him.
Ryan, my son's doing the junior mocks today, just like yourselves. My worry about him is that I can't get him to go out and exercise, and he doesn't want to go training. He's quiet by nature, and I never stop worrying about him. He's 14 going on 15. Well,
sometimes, you know, it's not necessary that as a mum or a dad, you're going to be able to encourage your son or daughter to go out even for a walk with you. Although, you know,
up to the shop to get outside, it's a nice thing.
Yeah, yeah. But the other thing is, you know, maybe one of his mates, maybe you could get in touch with a friend to say, look, call around, please. Just call around, drag my son out. Or get somebody, you know, even if it's an aunt, comes to visit and says, come on, we'll go off. And like that, just to get him out the door, just to get that little bit of air into
keep
him.
Keep that going.
Yeah,
I've been seeing the ads for 21st Century Child on television, so it's back in action on Thursday, 10:15. So what can we expect from the new series?
Well, school. They're all going to school.
So finally
we've reached the stage where they're all going to school. So they're at this age probably some have turned six. The rest of them are about to turn six if they haven't already. And
it's a huge moment in life.
Yeah. So we started filming with them September 12 months ago again as they were all getting ready to go to school. And it's just great. It's great to see them going off in the uniforms. And it's just, it's really interesting. This is the first series as well where we actually get to really hear the children talking themselves, which in the second part of the series, which is just really nice. To hear their voices as well, but it's just the same, I suppose, as it has been in many other programs. Just looking at just the whole changes that have happened for families and what's gone on in their lives in the time since we last saw them, and the changes, you know, the changes in society that's impacted, and you know, some people having to go abroad, and
it's just a microcosm of the country's story.
It's turned out to be exactly what we'd hoped in terms of the series, just that real sense of what's going on. Absolutely,
Thursday night, RT1 at 10:15. David Coleman, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you.